The reading is taken from Ezekiel chapter 1, verses 1 to 9 and 25 to 28. In my 30th year, in the fourth month, on the fifth day, while I was among the exiles by the river Kabar, the heavens were opened and I saw visions of God. On the fifth of the month, it was the fifth year of the exile of King Jehoiachin. The word of the Lord came to Ezekiel the priest, the son of Buzi, by the river Kabar in the land of the Babylonians. There the hand of the Lord was on him. I looked, and I saw a violent storm coming out of the north, an immense cloud with flashing lightning and surrounded by a brilliant light. The center of the fire looked like a glowing metal, and in the fire was what looked like four living creatures. In appearance, their form was human, but each of them had four faces and four wings. Their legs were straight, their feet were like those of a calf, and gleamed like burnished bronze. Under their wings, on their four sides, they had human hands. All four of them had faces and wings, and the wings of one touched the wings of another. Each one went straight ahead, they did not turn as they moved. Then there came a voice from above the vault over their heads as they stood with lowered wings. Above the vault, over their heads, was what looked like a throne of lapis lazuli, and high above on the throne was a figure like that of a man. I saw that from what appeared to be his waist up, he looked like glowing metal, as if full of fire, and that from there down he looked like fire, and brilliant light surrounded him. Like the appearance of a rainbow in the clouds on a rainy day, so was the radiance around him. This was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord. When I saw it, I fell face down, and I heard the voice of one speaking.
Thank you very much. Sorry for those of you who would have loved all the verses in between, but you can read them on your own sometime. Not now, but sometime. And there's much to be said about them, but I probably won't say everything that you'd love to hear today. But we're going to start anyway. Anyway, warm welcome. Great to be here. My name's Tim. For those of you online, if we haven't met yet, it'd be great to meet you later on and to hear a little bit about you and why you're here today. But you're here for a reason, and we're all here for a purpose, and that is to worship God. So thank you to Claire and for the team of musicians to lead us today as well, and for helping us as we worship God together here in this place. As Claire said to us, we're starting a series looking at some of the chapters of this book of Ezekiel. We're not going to cover every chapter in it, and you can do plenty of that on your own, and there's plenty of resource out there for you to dig into it yourself. But I just wanted to highlight a few things as we go through this season as well. And so we're going to start, obviously, in Ezekiel chapter 1 and look at this particular passage for today. If you're over 30 years old today, I wonder if you can remember being 30. For some of you, it's a long time ago, I know. And for others of you, it's only like, seems like yesterday, doesn't it? But what were you doing when you were 30 years old? I wonder, where were you? What was going on? What sort of 30th birthday party did you have? Was it a celebration? Were you glad to be 30? As I was traveling into church today, on the radio was a program, and there was somebody saying, you know, this person's reaching the big 3-0 today. Now, when you get to 90 years old, a big 3-0 doesn't really count, does it? I mean, a big 9-0, but not a big 3-0. Now, if you're under 30, of course, here today, I wonder, what would you love to be doing when you get to 30? What would you love to be when you're 30 years old? What would you have mapped out for your 30th year? Now, when I was 30 years old, I was a one-year-old dad. I was a two-year-old church leader trying to lead a congregation up in the wilds of Northumberland, making it up as I went along, which is much the same as it is today. Actually, nothing much has changed there. But I thought I had my life mapped out for me, and I thought I knew what God was going to do with me. But of course, we all know that we may make our plans, but God clearly has the final say. At 30 years old, you've got energy, haven't you? You've got a little bit of experience which you can build on, and you're looking forward to changing the world, but you very quickly find out that actually the world begins to change you, that life begins to happen and things change in the plans that you have. Here, right at the beginning of the book of Ezekiel is in his 30th year. 30 years old. He by now would have expected to have been a priest serving in the temple in Jerusalem. In fact, he would have been a 5-year priest. He would have started when he was 25. He would have expected to carry on throughout the rest of his life. That was his trajectory. That was his life plan. That was his career path all laid out for him. But of course, in his 30th year, instead of being in the temple, serving God in the middle of Jerusalem at the height of the life of all that was going on, he finds himself by this river in a foreign place with the other exiles who have been forcibly removed from their homeland. He's not a priest, he's just an exile. He has no status. Perhaps he feels he has no future either. It wasn't quite what he had planned for the rest of his life, and particularly for what he thought was going to happen by the time he was 30. But Jerusalem was overrun. The Babylonian Empire had overtaken all the greatness of that particular city. And now these displaced people found themselves in a different world from the one that they had imagined. Now, Ezekiel would have grown up at a time of great excitement in the city of Jerusalem. It would have been a very exciting time. He would have been there when King Josiah was calling the nation to reform itself, when idolatry was prevalent, but Josiah wanted it all to be taken away. He was calling the nation back. Ezekiel was in Jerusalem when Jeremiah was around. Now, if you know anything of Jeremiah, you'll know that that would have been a lot of fun. I mean, Jeremiah not only spoke some pretty crazy words, he also did some pretty crazy things as well. And Ezekiel would have been there, and he would have witnessed all this happening in the city of Jerusalem at that time. But also, of course, he witnessed the decline of Jerusalem. He was there as part of all that was being stripped away from all the familiarity that they had. He witnessed the decline in Judah as King Jehoiakim did evil in the eyes of the Lord, as the Lord sent Nebuchadnezzar into that city, as the Babylonians destroyed Judah itself, and then dealing a final blow when King Jehoiachin was king, and then he was taken away as well. And finally, King Zedekiah came in as well. You can read all about that at the end of 2 Kings in its historical context. It wasn't quite the future that Ezekiel had in mind. From being set to be a priest in the temple with the flourishing Jerusalem city, that had all gone. And his life was now walking along a river in a foreign land. But although that wasn't the future that Ezekiel had in mind for him, it definitely seems to be the future that God had in mind for him. And sometimes in our lives as well, we may move into different aspects of our life that we didn't see coming, we didn't plan it, but somehow God seems to have a way of using even those circumstances for his honor and for his glory. And this potential priest was about to become a powerful prophet among the exiles that day. If you know anything of the book of Ezekiel or you have a read of it at some point, you'll see that in the opening chapters there's judgment that comes upon the people. And then as the book continues, we get into these words of restoration, that God was going to do a new thing, that God was going to keep his hand upon these people no matter the circumstances they found themselves in. And so on this particular day, in this particular place, given all these particular circumstances that Ezekiel had, Ezekiel 1:1 opens up, the heavens opened, and Ezekiel saw visions of God. Isn't that good news? that no matter where you are, no matter what has happened in your life, no matter that maybe it's taken a slightly different turn from the one you were imagining, the heavens can open and you too can see visions of God. That's what I call a birthday present, don't you? Imagine getting that on your 30th birthday. That must have lifted his eyes, that must have lifted his heart to the future that God had. It wasn't quite in the temple, but it was on the banks of this river, and so began for him this next part of his journey. That despite the circumstances he was facing, the disappointment of his dreams being deferred, the confusion of a compromised community that he had every hope for and yet had seen decline, and the frustration of a future that now looked very different, something happened that day that changed Ezekiel's life. Because, as verse 3 says, the hand of the Lord was on him. That's a great starting place, whatever age you are, to be confident that God still has plans and purposes for you. No matter how far away you feel from where God is, no matter that your life might feel like it's in exile right now, maybe your dreams have been shattered, maybe your lives are heading in a direction that you could never have imagined them going, or you wanted them, and yet the hand of the Lord is never too far away. We need to stop. And we need to remember the truth of God's promises to us. Your God has not forgotten you. Wherever you find yourself today, God has not forgotten you. He has not lost sight of you at all. In Psalm 139, the psalmist writes these amazing words, verse 7. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go to the heavens, you're there. If I make my bed in the depths, you're there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me. Your right hand will hold me fast. See, the hand of the Lord is on those who will stop and remember who he is. I mean, it's clear that the nation had taken their eyes from Yahweh, their God. They'd chosen to live apart from his law, his guidelines for living at their best. And so God's judgment had come upon them, and they had been taken away from their land. But God had never lost sight of them. They were, after all, his treasured possession. He wasn't going to abandon them now, even though this time was hard. And so God calls Ezekiel to be this voice of hope, that this voice of new things that would begin to happen. That this voice that says, even if all seems lost and dreams have been dashed, you know what? There is still a future for those who will stop and remember they can never get far away from the hand of God. I hope that that comes as great comfort to you today, that you're never too far away from the presence of God. But not only do we have to stop and become aware of it, the second thing I think that Ezekiel did in verse 4 is it says he looked. You have to look to see what God is doing. It would have been easy on the banks of the river Kibar to just look down at the mud that he was walking through, the dust that was there, the river that was flowing. But no. God calls him to look upwards. And because this vision comes, Ezekiel stops and lifts his eyes. He looks to see. And Ezekiel sees this magnificent, majestic vision of God that maybe he had forgotten. But in this moment, he looks up and sees. He doesn't see it while he's serving as a priest in the temple, where everyone thought that was where God's presence was, the Holy of Holies, that's where God is, that's where things happen. No, this was on the banks of the river Kibar in a foreign land, far away from home. And God reveals himself in that place. God is not confined to a place. He's not His presence and power are with His people. That's His promise to all who'll trust Him. If we will lift our eyes and see what He is doing, we lift our eyes away from the mud and we choose to align our minds and our hearts to the things above. It's so easy to get focused on what is right in front of us instead of seeing what is above us. What God has for us. It was Paul, when writing to the Colossians, who said, "Since then you've been raised with Christ, set your hearts on things above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God." You know, these visions are not just for people stuck in the Old Testament, they're for people now to understand, to set our minds on things above, to allow our eyes to be drawn to the majesty and splendor of the risen Christ, who has given Himself for us to give us hope. Set your minds on things above, Paul says, not on earthly things. I think it's there that hope begins to start. Hope of something new happening, hope of something changing, hope of what God is going to call us to, if we will only stop and look to see what that might be. You know, in all our lives, whatever our lives are full of, there is so much to distract us, so much competition for our attention, so much that we could look at that we get fixed on. But God wants to grab your attention. Every day He wants to grab your eyes. He wants to find space in your mind so that you can encounter Him afresh again. He's longing for us to look and see His majesty and His splendor. I mean, you may not see the vision that Ezekiel saw, the lightning, the light, the wheels, the eyes, the creatures. I mean, in some ways, you may not want to see them. You might get worried about that. But you know what? There's a vision to see of a God who loves you, who cares for you, of Jesus who died on a cross and who rose again. And that even in exile, even when we feel far away from Him, we still can get a glimpse of His glory in those places. He desperately wants to show us something that will draw our attention to Him, a vision of who He is. It happened to Jacob in the desert. You can read about that in Genesis. Jacob was so worried about the destination that he was going. He was so concerned about his life and his journey that he failed to understand what God wanted him to learn on the journey. And it wasn't until he fell asleep and he had a dream of a stairway to heaven that he declared, "God, surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it. How awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven." I mean, what a declaration to make. You can read it in Genesis 28. To understand that as he's on his journey, God is still there in that place. He hasn't abandoned him. It's not some future hope that he's heading for, that one day he will be aware of God. No, now on the journey he gets a vision of who God is, and God wakes him up with that hope that he has in that moment. So whether you're in the wilderness or whether you're by a river, or you remember the two disciples on the way, on the road to Emmaus, if we will look, if we will stop, perhaps our hearts will burn within us as we encounter the presence of the living God again. And just as Jacob found strength and boldness and hope again to continue the journey, then we too, just as Ezekiel, can find a new hope with a clearer vision of who God is. Ezekiel's vision was a moment where it was like heaven had come to earth. It embedded itself in the reality of his journey, of all that had happened to him in the past and all that was going to happen to him in the future. Heaven had landed at his feet. He began to see something living and alive and powerful that would transform all that was going on. That God is not far away from those who will stop and look and sense his presence. Paul in his great speech to the people of Athens in Acts chapter 17 says, "The Lord who made the world and everything in it is the Lord of heaven and earth and does not live in temples built by human hands. He is not far from any one of us." Stop and look. And if your mind's going back to the highway code or the green cross code or your parents telling you how to cross the road, what's the next thing you do? You stop, you look, and you listen. Verse 25 of Ezekiel 1. Then there came a voice. There came a voice. Not only a vision that stopped him in his tracks, that allowed him to see the majesty and glory of God, but now this God is speaking to him. Then there came a voice, and Ezekiel is ready to hear and have this clearer vision, to be obedient to what God is calling him to. Here's the future, Ezekiel, that I have planned for you. Your hopes and dreams you felt were dashed, well, now they're going to start all over again, but it's my plan for your life now. You may have lost hope in this place of exile by this river, but I have a future for you, and here's what it is. You know, many times in the Bible story, you'll see people who set off in one direction, but being compelled by God's call to go in a completely different direction. Abraham, Joseph, Ruth, Mary, Paul, countless followers of God who started off one way, and then suddenly God intervenes in their life and says, no, we're going to go this way now. They stopped, they looked, they listened, so that by seeing they heard and by listening they saw exactly what God had planned for them. But what is it that convinces us to follow that plan? What is it that convinces us to live our lives now in God's direction rather than ours? Well, Ezekiel 1:28 says, "It is the glory of God that does that to us." It's the glory of God. In Hebrew, kavod, it means the heavy weight of God's presence on us. It's something we can't avoid. It's like so heavy on us, we have no option but to respond to it. It doesn't crush us, but it empowers us. It empowers us for the next step of this journey. That there's something more, there's something heavier than I'm feeling in my life, that God's glory is revealed to us. The glory that filled the temple in Isaiah's vision in Isaiah chapter 6 has now escaped the confines of the temple. And it's now pressing in on a person. It's pressing in on those who will stop, who will look, and who will listen. The Lord is here, waiting to be seen, to be felt, to be heard, to be responded to, because as in Ezekiel's vision, the wheel is touching the ground. The wheel that he saw is not aloof up in the heavens, it's on the ground. God's presence is here, pressing in upon those who would acknowledge it. You may remember that story where Jesus took Peter, James, and John up the mountain, and you read it in Mark chapter 9. And Peter had just made this incredible declaration that Jesus was the Christ, the long-awaited Messiah. And Jesus had just told them on the back of that he was going to be killed, not quite the image of Messiah that Peter had. And then Peter told Jesus off for being so negative about what was going to happen. And then 6 days later, Jesus takes the three of them up onto this mountain, and there they see Jesus shining with God's glory. And it's that moment that transforms their lives into the reality of what God's call is. They have a glimpse of resurrection hope in that moment. I think that's what Ezekiel got, a glimpse of resurrection hope. He saw what looked like a human. He saw a glimpse of God's resurrection hope, a clearer vision of God's glory. That no matter what circumstances we find ourselves in or where we find ourselves in, there is hope if we will see this clearer vision. And just as the disciple John would fall down before his vision of the risen Jesus in the book of Revelation. So too Ezekiel, chapter 1:28, it says he fell face down. He put himself in the position of humble obedience, ready and available for what was to come next. I'm available. I'm available to you, God. You've overwhelmed me with the sense of your presence, and now I'm available to do what you want me to do next, to speak the words that you will speak to me. And so whether it feels like you're walking in mud, in exile, far from home at the moment, or whether you're walking up a mountain in your homeland and you're expecting of what God is wanting to do next, let's take time to stop. Let's take time to look to see God's glory. Let's take time to listen to his voice and to know that he is with us, a clearer vision of who he is. In John's great prologue in his gospel, in John chapter 1 and verse 14, he writes this: "The Word made flesh made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son who came from the Father full of grace and truth." And hope begins when we're on our knees in the presence of that glory. And it's there that we get the clearer vision of Jesus. In a few moments, we're going to gather around a table and we're going to eat and drink and remember the glory and splendor of Jesus. It's such a simple act of remembrance, isn't it? There's nothing complicated that gets in the way of it. And yet, in the simplicity of it, we get to see, to glimpse the glory of the resurrected Jesus. The hope that the cross declares. The hope for all those who are wandering around feeling in exile. The hope for those who long to see Jesus, who long to know the freedom that he brings. The hope for those who are unsure as to what the future holds. It's enough for us to fall on our knees and experience his splendor. The glory of the Father who's made himself known to all who will fall on their knees in adoration and respond to his presence. So today, whether you're in your 30th year, or you wish you were in your 30th year, or you're in your 60th year, or your 90th year, or whatever in between, whether your plans for your life have been exiled by other pressing matters, or whether you are up the mountain at the moment, whether you find yourself in what you might call your second choice life, it wasn't the one you hoped for, and maybe like Ezekiel, wasn't quite what he hoped for, but he's there. Or for Daniel, or for Ruth, or for Mary. It wasn't quite their plan, but they were there responding to God's call on their lives. Wherever you are today, God longs to make himself known to you afresh. And in the simplicity of a bread and some juice, he can make himself known to you again. And you can encounter his presence. He is here. Heaven is touching earth in these moments. I pray that you'll feel the weight of his presence here today. And you will respond by humbly on your knees worshiping him, stopping for a moment, looking into his face, and listening to what he has to say. A clearer vision that will spur you on for tomorrow and the days that come, knowing that he has plans for you, hope and a future, if we get a clearer vision of him today.